with Andrew Foster, Chief Investment Officer at Seafarer Capital Partners. That means he's the lead manager of the Seafarer Overseas Growth and Income Fund. That's ticker symbol SFGIX. He's also co-manager of the Seafarer Overseas Value Fund, SFVLX. Now, I should point out that SFVLX, the newer of his funds, open to all investors. I believe Seafarer Overseas Growth and Income is soft close. But if you want to learn more about the funds and what they do, go to seafarerfunds.com, just like it sounds. Andrew Foster, welcome back to Money Life.
It's good to be back, Chuck, and thank you for letting me speak with your audience.
Well, we are talking during those, you know, sort of proverbial interesting times. We have seen basically volatility come back to the market, and I think most people had either forgotten that it existed or were just caught unaware by it and a bit surprised. For you, is this volatility a good thing or is this volatility troubling?
It's a bit of both. I think any time there's volatility, I think a really disciplined long-term investor should think about adding to the positions that they have maybe not accumulated enough of because of concerns over valuation. So it can be used as an opportunity. But personally, at this moment, I think that in early 2018, I think we're experiencing a lot of volatility in markets that may be full of some speculation. And in my corner of the world, emerging markets, there's some unhealthy things going on. So I think the volatility is a bit of a sign of the fact that markets were a bit overheated.
You know, you are a value-oriented manager by nature. And you just said something that we were talking earlier on this show with Abbe Deshpande from Centerstone Investors, also a value-oriented guy. You know, the market, for all the volatility and as much as people are wringing their hands, basically has stepped back and given back a month's worth of gains. And a month ago, if we had been talking about valuations, we would not have been saying, well, the market is you know, looking at a spot where it's cheaply valued. So if we've seen volatility, but it's only moved us back to where we were last month, and valuations last month were not exceptionally good, isn't that a sign that this isn't yet a buying opportunity, just from that perspective?
Right. When I mentioned having your shopping list out, I think of it as stock by stock. I think you can always, in a large marketplace, you can probably find a few ideas that are worth acting on. But you're right. I think in terms of the market being fairly steeply priced, what we've done is wrung out 1 month of gains that were really quite automatic and somewhat speculative. So I don't think this has necessarily made the market overall move to a healthier place. I would address my comments to the emerging markets more because I don't follow the U.S. as closely, but I think the emerging markets still have some fairly speculative characteristics at this moment in time, which may lead me to worry.
So let's talk about those particular characteristics, because people were expecting, as we got into this year, almost universally with the guests I had on the show, they were expecting that international would do better than domestic and that emerging markets would lead the way and do better than broad international. Yet you are talking about things being speculative. Now, speculative in some cases is an adjective that means, yeah, it could be racy and could be really going far. In other times, it's an adjective that means it could be really dangerous. So which is it? Because a lot of people were expecting big things for emerging markets this year.
I think it's, again, a bit of both. Let me say first on the more speculative, racy side of things that might be okay if things work out, but you're taking a gamble, and that's on earnings growth. Earnings growth was very high last year. It looks like it's going to be about 23% for 2017 across the emerging markets. This year, it's falling quite a bit, maybe 13 to 15% kind of range. What happened last year was there was a huge push in investment in China in a handful of sectors, really technology, real estate, and some infrastructure-related sectors really boomed, and the banks also because they lent to all of this stuff. And so it boomed for a year. I'm not sure that boom is really repeatable. It really requires speculation to think it'll keep going. So that's the part that's, I guess you could say, healthier, is if you believe that this boom will keep unfolding. I'm not so sure. The part that's really speculative and worrisome is the speculation on the benchmark index itself that people use to measure my performance and to measure valuations in the emerging markets, the thing that people don't understand right now is the incredible concentration that that index has in a handful of technology stocks. You hear about it in the U.S. with what people call the FANGs, Facebook, Alphabet, Netflix, Amazon, Google, this sort of thing. The concentration in my index is multiples of that in just a handful of large internet giants in China. So when you really want to get to brass tacks, you really have to believe that those internet giants in China are going to dominate the future of China and the emerging markets more broadly. And that I don't really buy into.
So do you have a position in terms of how much you're willing to keep, say, cash on the sidelines waiting for the right things to happen internationally, and what are going to be the conditions that you're looking for?
Yeah, well, I think your audience, which is very savvy, will hear me making forecasts, and their alarm bells should be going off, because I think any forecasts are rife with error, and my own short-term timing is really poor. So what I do in a portfolio context is not use a great deal more cash, but I try and go more and more defensive in my positioning in the portfolio. And what that really means is focusing on, for me, in my strategy, is to focus on stocks that have greater and greater and more secure dividend yield. I figure, bird in hand, companies making cash flow today and that pay that cash flow out to the fund in terms of dividend yield they generally have more stable business models to begin with, and then you get more of a bird in hand in terms of the income flowing out to you as an investor. And I think that gives a greater deal of stability in rocky times. It may mean that you're not capturing as much future potential for growth because you're investing with maybe slower growing, more mature companies. But in my mind, in a period of rockiness, this, if you're going through a period of potential volatility and you don't know when to go to cash, this is the next best alternative. So that's what I do in the portfolio.
How much are changing interest rates, both here and the interest rate picture internationally, going to wind up affecting things? Because we've got a central bank here that is becoming less accommodative, and it's not that we should continue to expect foreign central banks to become more accommodative, but we don't have a reason to believe that they will follow suit. So they may not be easing, but they're not likely to be ramping up, at least from the things that I have seen. So how does that change the global investment picture?
It's tricky. This is the thing. I would have your audience take home with them, whether they are interested in what I do at CFAIR or not. The one thing I would tell them is that the role of the dollar and the U.S. Federal Reserve behind it has very much diminished in the last few years, and its importance to other economies is on the decline. It's not that the dollar is still the most important currency in the world by a large margin, but there was a time when the Fed raising rates meant that the dollar would pretty much unequivocally strengthen, and it certainly meant that the emerging market central banks, the equivalents of the Fed, would also be following suit, raising rates. And that tended to have a choking effect on growth. It might also help fight off inflation, but it had a choking effect on growth. And so these central banks and the emerging markets had to follow suit whether or not it made sense for their domestic economies. They don't do that anymore. They are increasingly setting interest rates conditions based on their own local needs and not paying much attention to the Fed. And that means potentially some more currency volatility. In the short run, that's actually meant the dollar has interestingly been the currency that's been weakening so much. And I think it's a sign that the dollar doesn't hold full sway. So for your audience, what I think this means is I would not encourage folks to have huge foreign currency portions to their portfolio. It takes a lot of risk to have those foreign non-dollar assets in their portfolio. But to the extent they have some riskier allocations in their portfolio, I would really think about it, because the dollar doesn't hold the sway it once did. And I think getting a bit of exposure to foreign currency asset classes, whether they're stocks or real estate or what have you, if they have a little bit of a really aggressive positioning in their portfolio, it might make more sense to do that than in times past, because the dollar is just not as important as it once was, in my view.
Does that also mean, you know, these days you can find almost anything where you are finding a variation where it's hedged or you're looking for a manager who is doing some currency hedging. Is currency hedging more valuable than normal in these times?
I can only speak to its effect in emerging markets where I study it pretty closely, but what I can tell you is that unless you can predict which currency is going to go down in the next 12 months, the cost of hedging, maintaining a constant hedge, if you will, against everything all the time, definitely outweighs the benefit. You're paying twice as much maybe for the insurance as it is for the expected risk cost. So you really, now if you know which currency is going to burn down next, yeah, it makes sense to buy the insurance, but you'd be better off just getting out of that currency altogether. So if you have a crystal ball, use it. But if you don't have a crystal ball, the cost, in my view, outweighs the benefit. So I think the best thing to do for what we do at CFIR is just try and diversify the currencies in the portfolio as much as possible. Maybe avoid the ones that really look like obvious traps or reduce their role in the portfolio, but otherwise use diversification, which is pretty much always the cheapest form of insurance.
You know, you talked about how speculative things are in emerging markets, but, you know, as much as my audience has an interest, well, they're most interested in what's happening here, and we know that there have been a lot of headlines here. How much do you worry that if the U.S. gets the sniffles, every other economy and every other market catches cold?
Well, it's tough because I would say that on one hand, the economic growth of the emerging markets, I think, is increasingly decoupled from the United States and the developed world. These economies are starting to trade with each other more and feed off of each other more so than they've ever done in my career. So I think there are some basic grounds to think the emerging markets are acting and behaving separately from the U.S. and the developed world. So the idea of U.S. sneezes, emerging markets catch a cold is less true than it once was. However, I'll also tell you that in terms of stock market performance, the correlation between Chinese internet stocks and the NASDAQ is off the charts. They definitely feed off of each other. So if there was, a short-term downturn in valuations in U.S. tech stocks, it's certainly going to hit some of the leading stocks in emerging markets, particularly in the Chinese internet sector. And so I think stock market performance may be more coupled in some respects, even as economic performance and underlying corporate profit performance may be less coupled.
Very interesting. Andrew, I wish we had more time because I have more questions. Unfortunately, we don't. So we'll have to just trust that we can get back and chat with you again later on this year as we see how things are playing out.
Yeah, I'd love to do that. Thank you very much, Chuck.
Andrew Foster is the Chief Investment Officer at Seafarer Capital Partners. He's the lead manager of the Seafarer Overseas Growth and Income Fund, SFGIX, co-manager of the Seafarer Overseas Value Fund, SFVLX. And if you want to learn more about him, the firm, and the funds, go to seafarerfunds.com.